From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
It was kind of like the Hindenburg report. Like, I literally heard, oh my God, he got the wrong envelope, he got the wrong envelope. And then it was slow motion.
In an exclusive interview with The Business, Oscars producer Michael DeLuca remembers the night that culminated with the biggest flub in Academy Awards show history. DeLuca tells us what happened in the moments following that big mistake and what he thinks should have happened instead. But first on the News Banter, that Oscars blunder continues to resonate. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my associate in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, some time has passed since the Academy Awards debacle, and yet, as we are sitting here talking, this has not been resolved. I mean, I will just quickly say, if someone has not been in the world, obviously the wrong envelope was handed to Warren Beatty. He clearly was unclear what he should do in the moment. Faye Dunaway looked at the card and blurted out La La Land. Everyone thought it would be La La Land. Now we have this sort of rolling postmortem. You know, it took the Academy quite a while to respond. As we will hear in our upcoming Mike DeLuca interview, he was wondering what the heck was taking so long as he was at the governor's ball after the Oscars telecast ended. Why was the Academy so quiet? Ultimately, it started to become a question of PricewaterhouseCoopers. And now there is, as we speak, it could change before this airs, but certainly the PricewaterhouseCoopers' longstanding relationship with the Academy is questionable going forward. And these two accountants who were there, Brian Cullinan, who seems to have been the primary culprit, you know, tweeting a picture of Emma Stone as Best Picture was happening and standing there with the envelopes in his hand. But he and this other person from PricewaterhouseCoopers, Martha Ruiz, were the only ones who knew what the Best Picture really was. I think pretty much everybody else thought it would be La La Land.
Yeah, and that's the big problem here, is that once it wasn't La La Land, they should have done something immediately to stop the proceedings and say, listen, this is wrong. Don't come up on stage. Don't start giving your acceptance speeches. You know, 2.5 minutes went by, and the La La Land team was allowed to essentially embarrass themselves on stage in front of hundreds of millions of people while this guy was backstage tweeting in advance. So the question now is this enough? Is the severing of the relationship with these two accountants enough to put this scandal behind the Academy? And I think a lot of Academy members, many of them spoke to Hollywood Reporter this past week, are upset about this and find it hugely embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to touch on something you said just previously. I mean, yes, it was an embarrassing position for the La La Land team, but I think the consensus is they certainly ultimately handled it with considerable grace. I mean, there's one moment, if you look at the tape, where Jordan Horowitz, one of the producers of La La Land, kind of snatches the card out of Warren Beatty's hand. But I understand his exasperation. I mean, minutes are passing. They've been allowed to come up on the stage, and still no one has, you know, decisively acted. So now these two accountants have to have security because people are harassing them, which seems really nuts to me. The question of, you know, I'd say the Academy, as I said, the Academy relationship with PricewaterhouseCoopers is hanging by a thread. And I'm wondering, you know, we did a piece of talking to a lot of Academy members. They're very divided on what should happen going forward. The Academy is not a nimble organization. It's got huge board, lots of different, you know, elements in there in terms of demographic, opinion, age, everything. So they lumber, and it feels like this continues to lumber where it possibly could have been put to bed decisively sooner.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, one of the challenges the Academy has is it's got very diverse membership and they're very opinionated. And there's a lot of different opinions as to how this should be handled. They're also very press averse. They don't like the media scrutiny that comes along with the Oscars, even though they aggressively court media attention for their awards. So, you know, this is going to come down to the way that Cheryl Boone Isaacs as the president and Dawn Hudson as the CEO handle this with their members and come up with some kind of a solution. People have said anything from, you know, allow the Moonlight people to give their speech on next year's telecast to instituting a new procedure for the way that envelopes are handled backstage. Some of the other award shows have had the stage manager do it. They've alerted presenters as to who the winner is before they walk out, just so there's no shenanigans or any kind of mistake. There are a number of things they could do here. And the question is, what are they going to do? And is it going to be enough to put this controversy behind them?
Yeah, I will just mention that Martha Ruiz, some people are saying that both she and Brian Cullinan have been pushed off doing this again, ever, I guess. And there is also a movement for her saying she's not the one who was tweeting backstage, so why is she being blamed? To which I would say, yes, but she's one of two people backstage who knew that it was a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. She is responsible with Brian Cullinan for that 2.5 minute dead time where they should have stopped the show and it wasn't stopped.
And I'll just wrap up by saying I talked to a head of one company that has nothing to do with either film yesterday. He said, well, at the end of the day, this is more publicity for Moonlight than it would have conceivably gotten had it just straight ahead won, even in an upset. So I guess that might be the silver lining. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. By now, the moment is already part of Hollywood lore.
I'm sorry. No. There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
Moonlight won. This is not a joke.
2 days after that instantly infamous Oscars mix-up, we sat down with Michael DeLuca, who, along with Jennifer Todd, produced this year's Academy Awards show, a first for both of them. Until the very end, the show had gone smoothly, and then it all went wrong. DeLuca is a prodigious film producer. His credits include The Social Network and Captain Phillips, as well as 50 Shades of Grey and its recent sequel. He's also the former president of production at New Line Cinema and DreamWorks. DeLuca has been a guest on The Business before. In 2012, he came with director Bennett Miller to talk about their Oscar-nominated film, Moneyball. He is well-known in Hollywood for his candor. So, Mike, I had this just such a fun idea. As you know, we called you up before the Oscars, before the Oscars.
Yes, you did.
And we said, let's do a thing where you talk about producing the Oscars.
Right. And in typical fashion, in terms of how my life works, I said, oh, I'm a little busy right now. Let's do it after.
That would be better.
I'm in the bunker, you know, trying to produce the show. I'll call you after.
Yeah, I mean, we both thought it would be a better idea because then you would have had this experience.
Right.
And then...
Well, it worked out. I did have an experience, and we definitely have a lot to talk about.
We do. Well, so I don't know. Should we start with it first and get it out of the way?
Sure. Yeah. Go okay. For the red meat. That's kind of the equivalent of us opening the show next year with Best Picture.
I don't know. Do you ever want to produce the Oscars?
I do. I'm on record as saying I want to do next year because it's the 90th anniversary. And I'm really jonesing for, you know, being able to have a hand in the 90th anniversary celebration. I don't know if they'll, you know, pick me again.
Right.
But I'm on record saying I would absolutely come back next year.
You actually lobbied to do it in the first place.
Yeah. I loved it. I got to say, in all seriousness, with the mistakes aside, it was a great experience. You know, if you love movies, which I do and Jen Todd does, being immersed in that production with the production team, which became a family for 4 months, it was a great experience.
4 months. Okay, so you do all of this work and we'll get to where were you when things went south?
We have a producer's table backstage and that's where Jen and I were. That's kind of where we watched the whole show. You know, we have a hotline to the truck where the director is and a headset and we were watching backstage.
So you did not know the winner?
No, not in advance, certainly.
So you're sitting in at your desk there with your headset, and you think La La Land has won.
Yeah. I literally popped I joked, like, I'm popping the tab on my third Diet Coke of the evening, and this is the finale of my Diet Coke drinking, and just thought we were home free, thought we were in the clear. And I was feeling really good about how the show had gone over, at least in the, you know, all I know is how it went over in the theater at that point, so.
Right. And then what do you do? What happens?
So I was drinking my Diet Coke, and I heard Jennifer Todd next to me. It was kind of like the Hindenburg report. Like, I literally heard, oh my God, he got the wrong envelope. And then it was slow motion. You know, you perceive things slowly as your adrenaline rises and the cortisol floods your system. And by then, the course correction was in progress. And I just kind of watched like everybody else as the mistake was corrected.
You didn't feel like I should go out there?
No, I mean, it was really, before I could even get that far, we had Gary on stage. Like, there were so many people on stage dealing
with it.
Gary
being the stage manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do? You sit there and you think, I planned and I planned.
That came later. I think in the moment, I immediately went to the hotline and I said to the director, get Kimmel up there and let's conclude the show. But to Jimmy's credit, he was already on the way. Like, he was sitting with Matt Damon
right. To
do the kind of scripted final bit. It was going to be a little tagline with, Matt Damon. And he saw what was happening and jumped up and got on stage.
You wanted him to just... I mean,
I thought it would be a good time to conclude the evening. Don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, it was sort of obviously a great shame in a lot of ways, right? I mean, the Moonlight guys did get up and get to somewhat speak, but it felt odd.
Well, to
put it mildly.
Yeah, we knew that the segment, the Best Picture segment, was running long now because of the mistake, but there was no way we were going to not allow the Moonlight team to have their moment. So we said, let it ride. At least we can correct the mistake to the extent that the Moonlight people will be able to get up there and say something. But then following that, Jimmy had to get up there and end the show.
I mean, did you feel sort of crushed by it? Or
I didn't feel crushed. I felt heartbroken. I felt heartbroken for the La La Land people because Jen and I are both producers. So it was very personal to us. You know, we really could have empathy, being producers ourselves, of what that must have felt like for the La La Land team. And we were heartbroken over that. And then, you know, the Moonlight team being robbed of their full moment
in the sun.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it was heartbreaking. But, you know, we tried to not make our grief, you know, the headline item backstage, obviously, because there are so many other people to make sure we're okay. And, you know, first and foremost, the nominees, the winners, and Kimmel himself.
What was it like backstage?
It was a mix of disbelief and disappointment. It also became a Murder, She Wrote instantly of like, how did this happen? You know, Dawn Hudson, I think, and instantly, you know, she and Cheryl came backstage and started to assemble a group that could answer questions.
Obviously, this is Dawn Hudson and Cheryl Boone Isaacs who run the Academy.
Yeah. After my family was there, like my wife and kids were there. So after it was over and everybody was kind of crowding backstage, I ran into the theater just to scoop up my wife and kids, and I brought them back to my production office. And by the time I went down to the green room, Dawn was already kind of in mid-conversation with the players, just kind of trying to figure out what happened.
Were there a lot of, like, what the F happened?
Sure. I mean, there was a lot of... I think everyone was a little shaken. It had never happened before, at least in my memory. And
I don't think it... Yeah. I mean, there was a Sammy Davis mix-up sometime in the long ago,
right,
but it
right.
was not as serious.
Yeah. So everybody looked white-faced and shaken, and, you know, the blood was just drained from everyone, I think, appropriately, and everyone was just trying to keep it together as information was being offered.
So are you consoling people, or are people consoling you?
Neither. The consolation that I received was mostly by email the next day. I got a lot of nice emails about, it was a great show, don't fret about what happened, it's not on you guys, but they're trying to figure out what happened, but it doesn't take away from how great the show was, and blah, blah, blah. I did get one instant phone call, I have to say, from Steven Spielberg, who said he had watched the show with friends, you know, 30 friends at a screening room, and he thought it was great. And it was a real, like, pep talk, and I love him for it. It was really appreciated.
That was that night? Like,
that was that night, instant. Yeah, like right when the show ended.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool of him.
That's something.
Yeah.
Very sort of menschy of him.
Very menschy, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much your relationship, I can't think in my head that did you work together on stuff. I'm not.
No, you know, I just like the guy tremendously, and we've stayed in touch since I left DreamWorks. And so he's on the board of governors. And when I got the job with Jen to produce the show, I would call him and go like, "Hey, you've been there a bunch of times. What would you change? What would you improve?"
Right. He was asking a lot of.
I was asking questions, mm-hmm. and he was very generous with his time and gave us some really great suggestions. So I think because of that relationship over the course of the 4 months, he felt moved to give me a call and say, you know, buck up, kind of a thing.
Well, I mean, I want to be a little touchy-feely. Like, were you angry? I would have been.
In the moment, it was real heartbreak. I really just thought about the La La Land team, and I really thought about the Moonlight team not having their moment. And what Jen and I wanted to do the most was make it a good night for the nominees and the winners because, you know, I've been there as a nominee. I just know how my heart was racing when our pictures were up for consideration. So we wanted it to be good, and I wanted the show to be remembered for the Katherine Johnson moment, the James Foley moment with Sting and Dev Patel's wonderful introduction of Sting. Like, I wanted the heartfelt moments to be what we're talking about today. And I wanted the funny moments that Jimmy brought, you know, the really inventive, irreverent bits. I wanted that to be the topic of conversation. So it was heartbreaking that I knew, having come from studio marketing side of things and been in rooms with journalists and publicists, that I knew that this would be the story instantly, and that was kind of heartbreaking to me. The anger came later, but I've been through all the stages now. Now I'm into acceptance and forgiveness.
You are already.
Yeah.
That's quick Kubler-Ross work for you there, Mike.
Thanks.
Well, so, you know, we've been reading, as you say, the Murder She Wrote of it all has been unfolding, and we've been hearing all sorts of rumors about whose fault was it.
Right.
I just wrote a defense of Warren Beatty because I felt that there was an instant reaction of Warren Beatty blew it, which was completely unfair.
Completely unfair. I actually think Warren Beatty is the unsung hero here, like completely heroic, because I think that the time he took after reading the card that was the wrong card, it did create a window for the protocols to leap into action. And he was left hanging and out to dry because those protocols weren't followed. So I actually think he thought on his feet and allowed, before anything continued, a window for correction that wasn't taken advantage of.
It seems very clear watching the tape, which of course it's like the Zapruder tape.
Yeah,
you know? You're
back
just looking
into the left. Yeah,
he doesn't even take the card out of the envelope all the way. He sees right away.
Yeah,
and then he looks for another card in the envelope. It's sort of the pathos of that moment
totally.
That really struck me because he's saying, "Surely there's another card in here, and there isn't." And then Faye Dunaway starts to bug him.
Yeah,
he tries to, I guess, show her. You could say. Theoretically, I think he was showing her the card.
Yeah, I haven't talked to Warren about this particular thing, but I think he was showing her the card like, hey, are you seeing what I'm seeing?
Yes,
I think a mistake's
he's
been made here.
Recruiting her. Help
and,
me
and,
here.
And Faye, you know, who had no idea what he was looking at,
right.
You know, saw La La Land in big type and read the title of the film.
I think that's, clear.
They're completely in the clear to me. And I know that PricewaterhouseCooper and the Academy have apologized to both of them. And to me, like, they're heroes and completely in the clear.
The critique that some people had is like, why didn't he say there seems to be a problem? And my answer to that is, have you ever been on TV? Have you ever been on live TV?
Yeah. Also, you got to remember at that point, he didn't know La La Land hadn't won Best Picture.
I know, he expected it to win.
Yeah, for all he knew, the real envelope might have said La La Land. So he didn't want to create an extra mistake.
Every indication was it would win.
Right. I think it's one of those mistakes that's very easy to Monday morning quarterback.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So then the Academy... There was a sort of a pause, and we read that PricewaterhouseCoopers was reluctant to make a statement and take the blame. And I don't know if you participated in that.
I didn't participate in it, but I kind of inferred in my own thinking, you know, when I was at the governor's ball, like, I just thought, okay, a lot of time is going by without a statement, which made me feel like there's a discussion going on. So I just thought, there's a discussion going on. I hope it ends quickly, and I hope someone gets out in front of this before the evening's over, because I thought that would be good for the Academy.
And you're at the governor's ball, and is everybody just going like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I mean, I knew I had to walk into the governor's ball, and I would be accosted every 10 steps with a conversation about what happened. I just kind of prepared myself for that and tried to do it with aplomb and a few jokes, but it was gnarly.
Did you have some good jokes?
Yeah, I did, actually. I'm pretty good on the fly.
Give me a joke.
Well, it was more along the lines of, life is messy. It's a live show. I asked for spontaneous moments. That was certainly spontaneous. I just tried to keep a game face on about it.
God, I mean, and then did you go home and just like lie on the floor?
No, my wife...
Well, you won't live here anymore. You live in Texas now.
Yeah, my wife wanted to go to the Vanity Fair party. She had a great outfit on for it. So
we're not wasting that outfit, honey.
Right. So I knew the evening for me would continue for hours and hours.
And did you just have this impulse, like, I don't want to go, but I will go for you?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, I wanted to not be asked about it that night because it had just happened. And I knew I would have to talk about it the whole evening. But, you know, we make sacrifices for our loved ones.
Coming up after a short break, Oscar producer Michael DeLuca tells us what he thinks should have happened following that fateful envelope mix-up. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Michael DeLuca, co-producer of this year's Academy Awards. When we sat down with DeLuca on the Tuesday following the ceremony, the Academy had not yet cut ties with PricewaterhouseCoopers accountants Brian Cullinan and his colleague Martha Ruiz. But attention was already intensely focused on Cullinan because he had been tweeting moments before he handed the wrong envelope to presenter Warren Beatty. DeLuca told us that following that epic screw-up on Sunday night, the Academy launched an internal investigation almost immediately.
So I knew eventually we would get a report on exactly what happened. And we did. So I don't know how much of it has been made public or how much of it has kind of been guessed at by a journalist.
I don't know if the Academy will reevaluate. Probably you don't know, or maybe you do.
I don't know.
The relationship with Pricewaterhouse or...
I hear H&R Block is available for next year, so that might be worth looking into.
All right, you could get computer software.
Yeah, just... or the TurboTax people right. I hear are looking for the gig.
Right. So what should have happened in an ideal world?
Look, I'm speculating because this is all new to me, the protocols of exactly what should have happened. Because it's one of those mistakes that everyone says will never happen.
I mean, what do you talk about before the show that might happen? Like somebody gets drunk or somebody...
To tell you the truth, we didn't, in our wildest dreams, think we had to have a conversation about what if the worst thing that could ever happen happens. And even when someone brought up like, well, what if this happens? Everyone's like, don't worry about it. They have protocols. It's a foolproof system. And I think they said the same thing about the Titanic cornering on icebergs. It's fine. It's never going to happen. Don't worry about it. We got it.
Yeah. That worked out well, too. So what should have happened?
You know, I learned after the fact that they memorize the winners. Brian and Martha, the accountants.
The two accountants.
Yeah, had the winners memorized. Mm-hmm. If I was in that job, and I know I'm Monday morning quarterbacking, which I detest, and I think it's not a cool thing to do, but I do feel like if it's my one job, if I heard the wrong name, I'd walk directly to Warren Beatty and say, you got the wrong envelope, here's the right envelope, and make a charming moment out of it. Again, easy for me to say, very easy for me to say, but I don't know what else to say. I feel like that's what should have happened.
You have one job.
Yeah.
So stepping back from that, you said you loved doing the Oscars. What did you learn about doing the Oscars?
That it's a live show and kind of anything can happen. You can only plan so much. But I love the immediacy of it. Jen and I, because we produce movies and TV shows, everything is scripted. Everything is planned. It's a rigid process in a way because time is money. Not that it isn't everywhere, but a live event for ABC, you know, the second most watched event, you know, after the Super Bowl, brings an excitement to us and an urgency and an immediacy we don't get in scripted stuff.
Now, you know what? We have heard for a while, long while now, that getting people to present is not easy. It's a big pain in the rear end for talent. You know, you have to suit up and you have to maybe if you're decent, come to rehearsal. And, you know, it's not easy. Do you worry that people won't want to do this now even more so?
I don't know. It's an interesting question. I think the community has thicker skin than that. I bet a lot of the community is going to think, well, that will never happen again, probably, because what are the odds? I know it's like famous last words. But actually, I found the talent and the publicists and everybody that was up for it so excited about just wanting it to be a good show. I think everybody was kind of excited about the nominations. I would have loved the story to be Moonlight, this little film that has nobody traditional in it that celebrates African-American LGBT culture, won Best Picture. I mean, it's a tremendous landmark and underdog story, and that should have been the lead story. But once that was dominating the nominations along with La La Land and the other pictures and a lot of the other nominations, you know, represented diversity, I think people were excited to come to the show. We had it much easier than the poor producers last year who were suffering through the Oscar So White thing.
Oh, yeah. I will ask you, as a person who's been nominated before and didn't win.
Three-time loser.
What was it? Social Network? I'm trying to remember.
And Moneyball and Captain Phillips.
When you go in, and you know, as it happened and was wrong this time, everybody said it's going to be La La Land, and you've got the other one. Do you think, but there's a chance?
Yeah, I was actually thinking, like, maybe this is what happened with Social Network and King's Speech. Maybe maybe we really won, because I'm still litigating that
recount.
In my head. Like, maybe, recount, maybe we won, and they didn't correct, because they didn't want to look embarrassed, and that explained a lot to
me. I think
you
should take that with you.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's try to set aside the debacle that happened. I will ask, you know, because it is ABC, and oh, surprised. Now, Jimmy Kimmel is the host.
Right.
Now. To what extent was it ABC saying we'd really want it to be Jimmy Kimmel?
Look, they certainly suggested that they thought Jimmy was the
right guy.
Suggested
strongly.
They certainly suggested, but they were not a heavy hand, I have to say. Like, they really do leave that in a really respectful way to the Academy. And but we didn't really have a lot of other suggestions to make. Like Jennifer and I really wanted someone in the Johnny Carson, Bob Hope mold of a true MC and a comedian. The shows I liked growing up had funny people who could tell a joke as the host. And I just think that that moves the thing along so much better. So Kimmel was perfect to me because he has tremendous affection for the people in that room. You know, he really loves movies as much as Jennifer and I do and loves pop culture. And he just felt like he had all the skills.
Have you talked to him about how he would feel doing it again if you did it again, having been through the Oscars from hell?
We didn't have that conversation. I would love for him to do it again. I like to when Billy Crystal did it for years in a row and they don't go host shopping. And I thought Jimmy was another hero of the night. Like, I thought his stuff was AAA.
Can you give me a hint when you talked to Jimmy Kimmel after the Oscars? What did that sound like?
He's great because he's immediately self-deprecating. You know, it was gallows humor in the immediate aftermath. And then he gave a really inspiring toast to the backstage crew. Like, you know, but he's that kind of guy. When we were prepping the show, he bought food for the entire crew. You know, like,
he kept dropping it from the sky.
No, that was actually delivered with people in trays. We waited for the audience to drop stuff on them. That third candy drop was almost Swedish meatballs, but we couldn't get the meatballs made in time. Just because meatball is a funny word.
Can you imagine? Don't they, like, I can't imagine the vehicle in which Swedish meatballs right. would be dropped. But I'm sure you would have worked that. It could have had a Swedish meatball
It was a beautiful little
incident.
Lace, yeah, diaper for it to come down in. He gave a really touching backstage toast to the crew that they did a great job and was really from the heart, and it moved everybody.
You know, the other thing that has been an issue is the In Memoriam package,
yes.
which had one live person in it and a few dead people,
yeah.
unfortunately, not in it. Who controls that?
Oscars.com actually vets the reel before it's locked in terms of making sure it's correct. And apparently, because I also got a report from the Academy on this, apparently a vendor supplied the wrong picture for that name, and it made it into the reel and just wasn't properly vetted, and it made it to airtime. But again, you know, I think it's the messy part of live TV. But I think the Academy has apologized to the woman's estate and whoever, you know, kind of raised the issue, and I think they've accepted the apology. But I think it was a failure of research.
Yeah, they'll have to be more careful.
Yeah.
And then the bus bit, you know, like when Jimmy does the tourists coming in. I don't know how staged or not that was.
Right. They were surprised. They absolutely did not know that they were coming into the theater.
You know, it was polarizing. I mean, my Twitter yeah. feed was half like that was super fun and right. half that was patronizing and not right. fun.
Maybe because I was a kid in Brooklyn growing up watching the show. Like, to me, it was real people got to see the show. And that was aspirational to me a little bit. I didn't think it was patronizing. But we had an attitude about the stuff that Jimmy brought to the show that, you know, we thought he's the comedian. He needs to be given license to do what he does best. And I actually thought that was a really good bit.
So he brings you an idea and do you get to vote it up or down?
The Academy gets to vote it up or down. We just kind of make suggestions.
You
and,
execute.
And opine.
You don't get to vote that much.
We voted. We definitely voted. We believed in Jimmy's stuff. We thought he crushed it that night.
All right, let's do a quick touch on where you are career-wise. You just had 50
Shades
Darker.
Yeah.
Yes. Not nominated, but...
I was shocked. Yeah, how dare they?
It would be next year anyway. It would be next year. And you moved to Texas. Like, how do you manage that?
I commute.
You commute to
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah, usually it's been working out about Monday to Thursday here and Thursday night to Sunday in Texas with the family, or a little bit vice versa, depending on the workloads. My wife is from Fort Worth, Texas, really grew to detest Los Angeles, did not want to raise the children here, wanted to return home. And, you know, she asked me, could you ever do this? And I looked at my schedule and I get all the face-to-face meetings I need to get done in 4 days. And when I'm shooting something, it's never here anyway. So I figured I could do this for her.
So hypothetically, could you take a studio job and do that?
Hypothetically, I don't know. I guess it depends on how bad someone wants me.
Okay, well, we'll find out, I yeah. guess. Michael DeLuca, co-producer of this year's Academy Awards. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business. Okay.